I'm sorry. This meeting hereby called to order. And the first order of business is approval of the minutes of the last meeting. February 23rd meeting. Entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Would you like to read that first, Madam Chair?
I guess you could.
Thank you very much.
So moved.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Minutes have been approved. Next item on the agenda is Mr. Mann. You want to come forward with your... I guess we've asked that you come today to talk about the... recently released savings plan that you from our county executive. The amount is a little close to $6 million in savings, and you itemize some programs, and we'd like you to explain the numbers and the programs.
Okay. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting us over.
You want to introduce your colleagues?
Full crowd in the afternoon. Let's start with the foster care savings.
Wait just a second. Does everybody here know your colleagues? Why don't you
Probably for the record.
Yeah, for the record. Why don't you introduce who's here?
This is the fiscal deputy, John Beefus. My first deputy, Diane Atkins. Our child welfare extraordinaire, Don Weedy.
Okay. Fine.
All right. Let's start with the child, with the foster care savings, because this is truly a good story. This is a project that we've been working on for about a year, year and a half, and we're starting to see some payoffs on that. If the board remembers, during my budget hearings for the last couple of years, we've talked about the Yellow Brick Road. We've talked about setting up a number of programs so that we could take a look at our kids in care, to see if we can't either step them down into a safe environment or actually send them home with the services that they need. And we're just starting to see the benefits of that. So this is a projection that said by the end of the year we'll have savings in this area of $3.3 million. So there is no, let me repeat this, there is no service cuts to our kids in care.
Okay. Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 3.304368. A rather precise number.
Well, we like to be precise at the department.
I'm sure, but that suggests that you have voluminous backup.
It certainly, what it suggests is, yes, that we do have a lot of material behind it in terms of what we expect to happen, what we expected to happen when our budget and what's going on now.
This is approximately 20% of what the county executive is gunning for in his $17 million savings package.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 5% of what he's the. Oh, that's not right. It is 20%. I'm curious as to then, this must ripple through the structure of this area. Are we talking about funding it with advanced retirements, non-filling of vacancies, transfers to other departments? Who pays the bill on this?
This basically is that we had a projection of X number of kids in care throughout 2010. We put that projection in based on a number of assumptions back last fall when we presented our budget. The budget committee looked at it, the budget office looked at it, the independent auditors looked at it, and came to the same conclusion that based on the assumptions that we had, it looked like our kids in care would come down from 2009, but not quite to where we're projecting them now. One major thing that didn't happen that we anticipated happening was The Ed Neglect Project in Mount Vernon did not have the impact on CPS cases that we had anticipated, and therefore didn't have an impact on the number of kids that came into preventive and the number of kids that came into foster care. If you'll recall, we had an Ed Neglect Project in Yonkers a couple of years ago, and that had a profound impact on the number of CPS cases. And since there's a number of ways you come into care with us, but the most prominent is through Child Protective Services cases that come in, when we looked at starting up the new program in Mount Vernon, well, one, we did a couple of things different so that hopefully we could mitigate some of those things, but we really anticipated that we would have a higher number of CPS cases. The CPS cases have stayed high, but have not significantly increased. So that has a ripple effect across that part of the budget. But again, I have to, I say this is, a savings that would be at the end of 2010 because it assumes certain number of cases go throughout the year.
2000, and then why are we booking $3.3 million in 2009 savings?
No, it's this year's savings.
Oh, I'm sorry, this is 2010. Yeah. Okay, so.
You had me confused there.
I just wasn't testing.
That's okay. I'll take younger anytime. It's the older.
Some of the rest of us will be there first. The I'm still looking to find out whose money is not going to be there. Is it because you make contractual arrangements with foster care parents that you won't have to put in? Where is the money going to be sweated out of this system?
It's not sweated out. It's we won't have to expend it. That's the simplest way.
With whom?
With the foster parents, with the residential treatment centers, with those people who service our foster care children because we have less children in care.
Okay, so these will be in relatively small contracts.
No, they're large contracts.
Large contracts with whom?
With residential facilities.
Why?
Yeah, this is truly a good thing.
Now, are these all county dollars, county tax dollars, or are these 50-50 grants from the state? Or
the foster care funding mechanism is best described as buckets. Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of money comes out of the foster care block grant. Up to a certain level, we can do 4D. Up to another certain level, we can do the EAF, and then it spills over into county dollars. So these are mostly county dollars.
So the programs that we're talking about here are funded mostly by county dollars.
The net result is a combination of foster care block grant, EAF where we can, the 4D where we can, and then county dollars. But yes.
And so the total programmatic cost of what you're dealing with is more than 3.3. It's approximately
about $55 million.
So we'll be giving up.
We will not be expending $3.3 million if our projections are correct.
So what will we be expending?
Yes.
$3.3 million less.
No, but what does that equal?
$52 million?
Yeah. Is there a place in the budget we can find it?
It's located in a couple places. It would be under child welfare. It would be under EAF.
I guess I'm still trying to trickle this out because I can't. I understand that you place kids in a variety of programs, foster parents, institutions, that sort of thing. An individual child going in is probably booked at so many dollars per day, and then there are this program and that program that constitutes the kid's support and all the rest of it. And that's where this all accumulates.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And by not putting in as many children into the program, you don't have to spend those dollars.
That's correct.
And there are savings to the feds and the state likewise on that expense.
Yes, not as much as us.
Okay, not as much as us, because we are, county is proportionally, what would you say, 60%, 70% of the cost?
80% of the cost.
No, probably not quite that. Probably this is our foster care plan. Maybe 50-60%.
50-60%.
Okay, is county funded?
Yep.
So, if we were to wait until the 2011 budget, you could conceivably, assuming these trends continue, you could walk in and say, "Hey, I could cut my budget by $3 or $4 million because the volume that we had in 2010 never showed up, and it's our expectation that this will not happen in 11. Therefore, all you're doing is really accelerating these cuts based on your belief.
No cuts, it's just an expense. Right. There's no cuts to service. Mm-hmm. This is just money we will not expend because we won't have as many kids in care. And again, we can't book this money until December because that's when we'll know if we actually hit it.
Right. But if you don't spend it, it falls to the bottom line.
Right. No, and that's assuming when you say, okay, then I'm going to come in $3 million less, that assumes that there's no rate increases for
first. Right. Oh, understood.
But assumes that nothing else is happening in the department.
You're absolutely right. And I agree.
We know today that what we know today and what we have, this department has a $40 million hole going into 2011. Hmm.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I found the EAF and the child welfare lines. Mm-hmm. EAF, it looks like you've been allowed $33 million for the year and $44 million for child welfare. Right? So that's $77 million. So 55 of that was going to be on foster care?
Yep.
And isn't it a mandate?
Yes.
But it's not a mandate to spend that amount of money. It's
the mandate is if I have to service the children, I have to serve them at the appropriate level of care, and then we have to spend the appropriate amount of money. If the kids aren't coming in, then I don't have to spend.
But how much of that, if we don't spend it, has to be sent back to state?
No, it doesn't quite work that way. We expend it, and then we go out and grab some reimbursement if we can. Again, this would, you know, if we have an hour, we could probably send John up there and he can show you the buckets and how they work. But the child welfare funding is very complicated in terms of, because again, the EAF is basically 50-25-25. 4D, if it goes in there, is 50-25-25. If I go into the foster care block grant, it's 100% up until I expend the foster care block grant. But we have always been, you know, ever since they went to the foster care blocker, we've never got enough money. That was always been a complaint with the state. When we started out, they underfunded us, and therefore,
we were filling in the blanks. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Will we still be?
Yes.
But just $3 million less.
Right. If the state doesn't pass any increases, if the number of kids in care continue down the trend that it's continuing.
I don't know. I've been reading all the news reports talking about the fact that because of the economic situation, child abuse and spousal abuse are on the increase now, and they anticipate that between now and this time next year, it'll continue in that vein. But you take a monthly census, I assume. And
we track all of our data. We take a look at all the things that are influencing it. And then we project out for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why don't you just go down the list and tell us about the other programs that you plan to cut.
All right. There's various COPS programs, and I'll let Diane talk to the specifics. It's in her area, but the various COPS programs that are administered by the department, basically COPS are Community Optional Preventive Services. And the populations that community optional preventive services are low to moderate risk kids, low to moderate risk of coming into foster care. Typically, in departments of social services, a lot of them don't use the COPS funding because they don't even service that population. We are mandated to service the preventive services population, and those are kids who are at imminent risk. So I just wanted to make that separation. In that area, there's various COPS programs that are administered by DSS, and we're basically looking at an annualized reduction of $41,000 with a savings of $10,000. And basically what we're doing there is these are contracts that we are negotiating going forward, and they are basically going back to what they billed us for in 2009. So that's what that is. The other COPS contracts, I'll let Diane speak to through Community Mental Health and the Youth Bureau.
Those are also, as we said, the key word is optional programs, and they are low-risk services that the Youth Bureau does. You see a number of programs that they have. I think we spelled it out as to Youth Bureau. Which ones are the Youth Bureau?
Yeah,
which
you
ones
did.
Belong to Department of Community Mental Health. What we ask them to do, those departments to do, is to look at their programs to see whether or not there are any other community resources that can pick up some of these programs, or if in fact some of these cases rise to the level of high risk, then those cases would be referred to DSS for preventive services, where they should be, because we do the intensive case management and the other kinds of services. So the Youth Bureau has taken care of their programs as well as the Department of Community Mental Health. And this is their report, how they've taken care of it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next in line is the child care programs. Again, when we were looking at things that we could control in the budget, you know our budget is approximately $266 million in taxes, $576 million in expense, but in fact, there's when you boil down and take the mandates out, you're talking about a department that's 90% mandated. So we took a look at, you have to go look at those things that we can control. When we talk about the daycare programs, first let me say that the department is a big supporter and always has been of our daycare providers and of our programs. And when you're looking at a $40 million hole going forward, and in the best case situation, a $25 million hole, in the best case means that the feds pass an FMAP increase, which we don't know whether they're going to do, we had to take a hard look at what we could do and what would be the best way to do that. The child care programs are funded to the tune of about $33.7 million in Westchester County. That's a significant commitment. With this $1.5 million reduction, we're still committed to $32 million. And if you break that $32 million down, you're talking about we are mandated to spend it at a minimum $24 million, but we can stop spending at that point. So we still have a significant investment of $8 million. This is how we would have proposed to get the $1.5 million. There are multitude layers of daycare programs. First, the daycare programs for individuals who are on welfare, or cash assistance as we call it now, will not be affected at all. The next level is the low-income daycare, and that's for individuals up to about 200% of the poverty level. They will be affected. That we would propose to, or that we intend to increase the parent share from 15% to 20%. Now, what does that mean? In a household of three, at the top of the low income level, which would be about $36,000, it would mean an increase in parent share requirement of $80.
Per
family, not per child.
Per week, per month?
Per month. So, and then the next level up is the Title 20 daycare, which we are not required by the state to provide at all. And what we're proposing there would be is to add the 15 to 20% increase, and then also freeze that as of April 1st. So all the applications that are currently in the pipeline and all the applications that come in between now and April 1st would be treated the way that they normally would be, and after that we would not accept any applications for that program. We would not eliminate anyone, take anyone off, unless they're otherwise ineligible at some later point in time. That would take effect, the freeze would take effect as of April 1st. Again, the parent share would go in June 1st. And then the third thing that we intend to do is to discontinue the scholarship fund. That's a program that we only do here in Westchester. It's a great program, but when you're looking at things as you look forward to a $40 million deficit, and you look at the other things that we're suggesting to do, it would make sense so that we would let the individuals who are currently receive it through June, I believe it is, or somewhere around June when their scholarship would be up, and then not reauthorize it after that. So the daycare,
so everyone who is covered would be covered through June?
Through June. Mm-hmm. So then your basic daycare cut would be $1.5 million.
Yep.
Mr. Burton?
Well, you referred to a $40 million deficit. The budget in 2010 is a balanced budget.
That's correct.
It may have some revenue shortfalls, we know that, and we obviously have to be prepared for that. But at this point, I am not aware that we have any hard data that would lead us to believe that there was an incipient deficit. What we're talking about here is making preparations for the 2011 budget. You've said that the commitments that have been made by this department in this area would be honored through their expiration, which I take it is June 1st. Is that where June 1st comes from?
Right.
So any cutting in this area would be in the form of not offering the service in the new contract cycle.
For the scholarship.
No one in any of these programs.
No, the low income would continue.
Right. No, I'm talking about the ones that you put up here on the block.
Right. There's three different ones.
No one would be removed from the programs. But new deals, new contract would not be offered in effect.
For the scholarship,
yes.
New contracts would not be offered. For the Title 20, we would freeze and not take any new people on, but would not throw anyone off.
Right.
The low income would continue the way it continues right now, open for a number of people coming.
In the second area where you're talking about freezing and not taking any new ones on, you have a vacancy. What do you do with that vacancy?
We do not fill it. That's where the savings comes. We have this area is budgeted at about 400 slots. We currently sit about 385 slots. We're anticipating that up to the freeze will go up to at least 400 or up and over, and the savings would come from people who would not be eligible as we went forward.
Or who subsequently drop out for whatever reason, would not fill those vacancies.
That's correct.
That's the mechanism.
Yep.
Okay. And has that been in effect so far?
No.
There has not been any of that?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We have
any? Yes. The next item. Oh, wait a second. I thought you were going to jump on it. If she's not going to jump on it, I'm going to jump on it.
I'm flabbergasted.
Yes.
Where do I begin? So, okay, we're going to cut them all out here, and instead maybe we should put some more money into COPS because we're probably going to see these kids cycle right around who don't get the early education they need, who aren't in qualified daycare, childcare. I mean, aren't we cutting off our noses to spite our faces here? I mean, what is this?
I don't think so. I think if we looked at, you know, the purpose of the program was, of course, first to offer opportunities to individuals who are not eligible for subsidies. These are individuals who are $46,000 to $56,000.
Because it's so expensive to live in Westchester.
Okay. I'm just...
Yeah.
And the second thing was is to bring individuals into licensed care. And I think if we looked at the program over the time, that at least part two had not really taken effect. And part two was, I think, that, you know, the last cycle, six people came in. Over the life of the project, I think 13% came in. So basically what you're doing is subsidizing people who are already doing it. Now, I'm not saying that in the perfect world, if I had unlimited funds, I wouldn't do this, because as you're well aware, I put this in my budget to start with. So what I am saying, as we look forward and as we start to look at things that are coming on the horizon, that I know it's March, but those things aren't changing. You know, this isn't like in terms of my $40 million, that might go down to 25, but it's not changing. The other thing we looked at was the Title 20 individuals, and you know the fear there was, is if I did this, one, I only have it budgeted to 400 anyways, and I'm right on top of that. But the second thing is that these individuals would come right back onto assistance. But in fact, if we studied over time, that only 20% of these individuals were even known to us. So they didn't use assistance before, and there's not a likelihood necessarily they would use assistance now. It's a, you know, it's a difficult decision and a difficult time.
And what happens to the centers themselves? So this gets pulled out. These kids get pulled out. You think all these child care centers are going to be able to fill up those spots?
Well, I mean, clearly we're allowing the low income, it has no limitations on it. It still continue to go. Still.
How many in that?
We have right now about 1,700
cases. Right?
Cases.
2,300
cases. And we're not cutting the Title 20. We're freezing it and taking it through attrition, which you were looking at about 10 a month, roughly, is what we do.
So we'll keep with about the three, I mean, we'll go from the current 400 down to
330, 340, somewhere now, if it still goes that, if it goes, you know, continues at the 10, on an average of 10 a month. No? So.
Okay. You can go if you want.
No, you did what you wanted to do, and I agree with you, John.
Okay.
Sorry,
Mr. Keska has
late.
A question.
Okay. I noticed on here you have the cut to the mental health, the community mental health. Is
the
that...
The COPS program.
Mm-hmm. Is that the program that's in the Peekskill Center? Is there any of those in...
I'm not sure. I mean, basically the individual departments are working with their vendors, so I'm not sure if they're funded under COPS or if they're funded under some other mechanism.
Okay.
We'll be meeting again with the director of the Youth Bureau and the commissioner of mental health in terms of what happened after they met with their vendors, so that we'll look at this going forward.
But in terms of our district impacts, this is likely to go across most of the impacted communities, the Peekskill, the John, the Austin community.
It depends if you have any of the COPS programs in that community, and depending on how the funds are met. Yeah.
Is any of this impacting Early Step Forward?
I'm not sure.
Can you get back to us on that?
We haven't talked to the other departments in terms of after they've talked to their vendors to see which ones and what was the thing. And we can certainly provide that once it comes out.
Which department?
Early Step Forward was DCMH.
I believe that was a separate funding.
But I thought he was using some COPS funding.
We'll check.
Your reductions in child care call for an additional 5% in October, is that right?
We have the increase for the parent share would go on June 1st.
Mm-hmm.
We would have to publish that, and we have to have a public hearing on that.
And is there another one being considered for October?
There would be one considered for October if we didn't meet our savings projection. We're at this point in time, we're not anticipating that we would have a problem meeting our savings projection.
You mean up to 25%?
Yes.
That would be in October if we needed to do that. But again, we're not anticipating that at this time.
The reason you're picking October is because that's the end of another plan cycle?
It was October is that we would know by September if we were going to make it for sure. In terms of projections and... Once we hit September, we'll know. We right now anticipate that we'll make that.
But when you commit to a parent for a child in the program, that commitment begins the 1st of June and goes to what point or period of time?
It's a month-to-month basis. We have, the recertifications run for 6 months, they're a year with a six-month contract attack. And again, in order to increase the parent share, we have to send, we have to do a public notice and we have to have a hearing and those types of things. So in the middle of the summer, we'll be able to determine for sure whether how this is working.
So the increase on the parent share, if it were to happen beyond the 15 to 20, would impact in the middle of the commitment to the child.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't happen at the end for the child.
It really depends. I mean, your recertification periods run a year. Some people come in, they're staggered as they go along. And there's a six-month contact in between where we update it to make sure that people are still eligible. So there's the longest period that you go without contact is 6 months.
And a family, say a family of an income of $30,000 a year, what would that mean in terms of
Well, there's a formula, and basically the formula, if it's $30,000 a year, which probably, I'm just guessing because I don't have my calculator with me, we know that $36,000 means at 20%, an additional under $80. So at $30,000 would be less than that. If the individuals made $27,000, the additional impact per week would be about $9. So that would be about $27, or $36 rather, for the month.
Well, for a family making that kind of income, that would be quite significant.
Huge amount.
Yeah.
So the next thing on there is a contract that we are not renewing. The department has determined that it can handle this information internally, so it, the contract expires on the 30th of April. We're just not renewing it.
March 31st.
Or March 31st, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So
March 31st?
And now, the executive director of my sister's place is coming to see me on Monday, but so... and we'll have another discussion around that.
Why don't you tell us why it's not necessary to renew the contract?
My staff feel that they can take care of this. They're trained. All my staff, CPS staff, is receives mandatory DB training. Mm-hmm. They feel that they can control the information. It's better coordinated services if you just have the one worker. What happened with the DV, they did provide staff in our offices, but we feel that we could do it in-house ourselves. We have some, matter of fact, each director has given me a plan, how they plan on handling it. They've designated some staff that will be the DV coordinator. The advantage to this is that our CPS workers know how to assess risk to children, and like I said, they all receive DV training. It's mandatory, and we can control the information. We can coordinate the services for the family in a much coordinated and tight control rather than having it contracted out.
At no increase to your own budget?
No, no increase.
So you're going to ask people to do...
To do more.
This extra job that you'd been paying.
We already,
$277,000.
CPS already investigates if there's any kind of DV case. CPS already investigates it. So we provide the services. We put the services in, and we coordinate it. So we don't see that there's going to be an impact. Each director has given me a plan. Matter of fact, we even have a couple of workers who are former workers of my sister's place, a couple of them will be designated as the DV coordinator. They get their training from OCFS just like my workers. We our staff development is planning ongoing training. We talk to Office for Women to give us anything new that comes up. We will continue with that. But the best part of that is that it's my CPS workers. And the whole thing is to look at the risk to children. Are these children at any risk of harm with this DV allegations? Mm-hmm. So it behooves us to have this coordinated services. It's right there in my office. We talk to each other, and we know how to plan for these families. And we feel that this is the best way to service the families.
If money were no issue, would you feel the same way?
Money was not an issue in making this determination.
So whatever, you would have pulled this contract?
Yes, this was not a part of a cut at all.
Oh.
This was something that was determined quite some time ago.
But not long enough ago to have been in the proposal for the budget for 2020.
That's correct. You know, again, you're doing that back in October or November. In December and January, they're looking at contracts that are coming up. They're saying, do I want to continue these things? And they move forward.
And this is as of the end of this month, is that right?
Yes.
So the contract runs through the end of April,
No,
March.
End of March.
Oh, that's incorrect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
So it was April 1st to
4-1 to 3-31, is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah.
I see. And the contract was for $277,751?
Right.
And did that help to bring in other money to my sister's place? I mean, is this going to result in an even greater? I mean, was this money that was counterbalanced or contingent, this money, another money, source of money was contingent upon this source?
Knowing that usually you can't leverage federal funds to get federal funds.
These are county funds, right?
They were getting, as part of this project, they were getting some state money that funded like 1.5 positions.
Mm-hmm.
But the governor had proposed eliminating that money in his budget proposal.
But again, this was a program decision, not a dollar
decision.
I have, Well, finally, you'll see some housing contracts, and again, that's the same thing. This is really a program decision. This was going to happen whether I had to save money or not. If you remember at my budget hearing, we talked about the problem with shelters and funding shelters, and that we were working on either taking another shelter offline or because it's so expensive and we have to carry all this vacancy because we can't we can't get another shelter if I close one. We are fairly comfortable that, you know, these two reductions meet the need, and I'm happy to tell you, at least at this point in time, we're still looking forward to that. We still may close another shelter by the end of the year, but again, the thing that scares us most is that we are the only county who are surviving this recession without having a significant increase in homeless population. And so we're trying to figure out why that is. I mean, I know we did all these new programs, we did all those things that helped us reduce the population. That was good. But all things being equal, we've got counties now who've never had a homeless population who have got to go get shelters. So we're being very cautious in terms of how we take units and services offline. So that's why we waited this long. And as we went into the budget, we'd already said, if we were all confident that somebody would help me get a shelter if I needed one, I'd have taken this money out of my last year's budget. And everyone said and agreed that, of course, that's not going to happen. Once you close one, one's never going to open, it's not going to open up again. So we have to do this in a cautious and thoughtful manner, and we are doing that. Yeah. So these were savings that were going to accrue because we were going to do that. So.
I think someone from the budget office, Olivia, do you have any questions that you want to?
I was in another meeting earlier. I didn't know if you've already addressed this, the foster care savings. Commissioner, I heard you speak with County Executive Estorino, and you mentioned the initiatives that started 12 to 18 months ago.
Right.
So I'm assuming that those initiatives already baked into the 2010 budget.
Right, but we also had the potential for increases because of the Mount Vernon ed neglect project, and we didn't get the increases that we thought we would get.
So
they could still come. Again, these are savings that are realized at the end of the year.
So the Mount Vernon savings were budgeted, and those will be offset by a shortfall?
No.
The savings won't be as great as anticipated in Mount Vernon, or what?
No. Mount Vernon was supposed to generate more CPS reports, which generates more preventive services, which generates more kids in care. Mm-hmm. That's what we saw with Yonkers. You could track it X number of months right after. You could see it. It was a bubble. It went for X number of months. We have not experienced that in Mount Vernon. Now, we learned from Yonkers, and we made some changes that we had hoped would do what it's doing now. But again, it's where we sit now.
So the reduction in the Mount Vernon and neglect patients are contributing to the $3.3 million in savings?
The Mount Vernon ed neglect did not generate the increases we anticipated, and that's really where we're starting to pick this up. Now, that could pick up, it could change. It's what our best view is now and what we've been looking at and tracking.
Mm-hmm.
And are there any new initiatives that are included in the 3.3 or continued initiatives?
We have continued initiatives. We have additional new initiatives that we're bringing online now that hopefully will continue so that we can continue to move the cases through. We have a length of stay initiative where we're doing a number of things. One, with our workers, we're giving them specialized training to do coached visitation as opposed to supervised visitation. That has proven across the country and other jurisdictions within the state to help reduce the length of stay of kids in care. There also, we've had one of our staff researching across the country for best practices and how to reduce the length of stay and what services we may need. So all those things will be factored in once we start to look at and move forward into the 2011 budget.
Go back a bit. Coach visitation as opposed to supervised visitation. You want to explain?
Well, I'll let
Alex play.
Diane, this is one of her favorite topics.
Supervised visits is that someone has to be in the room and while the visit is taking place. Coach visits are if you see something happening that you could strengthen the behavior, or you see something, you know, how a parent could have done something a little differently, or how we could have enhanced the visit, the coach would have been, we've been through Don, through staff development, bringing in trainers to watch how the parent interacts with the children. If there's something that could be corrected, if the child's acting out, or maybe the parent could have bought something for the child to have been active with, like crayons or something, or, you know, instead of yelling at the child, could have done something else a little differently. So those are what coach visits are, as opposed to just sitting there supervising a visit.
I don't know if I see a tremendous amount of difference. I would have thought that
parenting skills, you might say.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been happening anyway. But
no, that's not what supervised visits were.
Either of you have any?
On the matter of the housing, where you have housing, family shelter savings, various family shelters.
Right.
The program cost of this is how much?
For the family shelter is about $18 million.
So you're expecting that because of a decline in cases,
right,
you will be able to reduce your budget by $1 million, which generates a $250,000 right, savings in tax levy. Do you know or have you decided on which shelters you're going to give priority to keep full and which you're going to move toward reducing the number of beds that you're going to support?
You know, we're talking to the shelters now with respect to how we want to address this, because you know a lot of the problem with shelters is the overhead. We're looking at a long-range plan that by the end of the summer we'll present to the county executive with our recommendation of which shelter we think either should be closed or how we should handle the vacancy factor should it continue.
And how many of these shelters are there?
Family shelters, we have, what, four now?
The Coachman, the two help centers.
The Coachman here in White Plains.
Right, those are family shelters.
And the other two are?
And Mount Vernon and Greenberg.
Greenberg. Is there a fourth one? Did I hear of number four?
Yes.
The small one.
Yeah, I keep wanting to make.
Yeah, the Derichelle.
Yeah, I keep wanting to call it.
It's a small one.
These are all county owned and county operated.
No. The Coachman is county owned and operated by West Ham. The West Health Greenberg is the West Health Greenberg agreement, which where we rent pay rent to the property to the town, or actually pay rent to our vendor who pays to the town, and then we pay for the services. And then West Health Mount Vernon, we pay rent
to the city
for the building, and then we pay the. The services to West Health.
And the fourth one?
It's a small.
It's a small universal. It's really, it's just that it's got both females and males. And it's really not a family shelter. I always confuse. I always have that one by mistake.
Okay. So the And are each of the are there different vendors in each one, or is in fact there one vendor who has two or even three of the contracts?
Well, Mount West Health has two of them currently, and West Hab has one of the family shelters. We also have single shelters, but
by single shelters, you mean
shelters that handle only singles.
Single person shelters. Yeah. Yes, okay.
Or childless couples in the case of the Grassland shelter.
Mm-hmm. And so you will be making a determination among these three, which you will essentially try to go more in the direction of filling, and those that you'll not go in the direction of filling. And
right.
Are they on the basis of where the families come from? Particularly if they have children, obviously wants the children to continue in the schools they were in.
Right. So, and we're mandated to provide transportation should the parents want to keep the kids into the original thing, and that's a big expense for us. So that's one of the things we're taking into consideration. Every shelter has a plus and a minus. We're also working on a number of singles initiatives, and if they become fruitful, then there may be a totally different way of looking at how we do this. You know, for example, the Coachman is our most versatile shelter. It can handle big families. We own it. We know what the amount is going to be. That's a big advantage. West Health Greenberg is probably, from a shelter perspective, a model shelter. But along with it comes some limitations. You know, in the West Health Greenberg agreement, we have said that we would do every effort to put families there with kids who are not school-age kids. Well, if I closed one of the other shelters, that would be problematic. So there's, and that agreement is due to be renewed over the next 3 or 4 years, the way the original agreement is. The West Health Mount Vernon has already been somewhat converted to a rapid rehousing model, so it's a relatively inexpensive cost per customer. So all of them bring advantages and disadvantages. As you start to look at the shelter system as a whole, there may present itself some opportunities that may never present themselves again. So until we get to the point where we're comfortable, A, that this trend is continuing, and B, that we actually see the landscape of where we sit both with our singles and our families, because then we're not prepared to make a recommendation.
So the curve could go down. Mm-hmm. And that's the direction you're seeing, but the
right.
curve could go back up.
Absolutely.
And so how do you restart if it turns out in 6 months when the economy doesn't turn around and all of a sudden we see, which we always feared, which was there going to be an increase.
Right.
How do we start it up again if we let you do this?
We have turned our philosophy around and we're doing more scattered site apartments. We call them EHAPs. So they're a lot more flexible and easier to gear up and gear down. We're now in the process of seeing how rapidly I can gear one up, and that will give us an indication of when we could be ready to do this, because you know, I'm not talking a small facility now. The Mount Vernon, West Health Mount Vernon is the smallest, and that's about 50, but the other two are big. We're talking 100 units.
Oh, we've been there.
So yeah. we are really cautiously walking through this as we have before, but you know, we've closed
at least two motels.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So, and we've been successful in with all of our projects, and you know, a lot of that credit goes to our vendors who've done a great job with us. So,
all right, the EHABs, which are basically what apartments that you can
right.
bring online,
right?
That is helped by the current vacancy rate in
right.
apartment rentals.
Right.
But
it allows us to pay more than it would for welfare, but it's less than a per-cost case for shelter. So the real key to the EHAB is to develop these EHABs so that after a certain number of years, they roll into permanent housing at the rate that we would pay a welfare customer. So then we would go out and constantly be cultivating, but we would also be building a housing stock for our customers. Otherwise, what will happen is that I can expand it. I will save money, but at some point in time, I'll have way too many EHAPs, and I'll be running into the same type of a problem.
And so you'll have a larger management structure to go with.
Right.
And excuse me a second.
Oh, no, I'm working my way out of what
okay.
I was interested in.
The last thing on your chart, Hope Inc., That's an EHAB, is that right?
Right. So what happened with Hope Inc., Hope Inc. was going out of business. Mm-hmm. We had anticipated that our shelter structure was not going to be dropping as rapidly because of everything that was happening around us. Mm-hmm. It continued to go down. So when we built the number of EHAPs we needed in the 2010 budget, we now have this excess. We didn't lose the EHAPs because we moved them over to a current contractor to help fill up their allotment, and then we eliminated them. So in essence, we were able to take money out by doing that. So right now, we're looking at somewhere around a 25% vacancy is what we're trying to get to. That makes us comfortable. It says if we have a run on these things, that we'll be able to handle it. But even that, we're evaluating. Again, if I can bring an EHAP online real quick, then I might be able to go down that, down lower. But it's a real a methodical way of looking. Every time you change the process, you have to see what the outcome is and what is there any unintended consequences. So we're cautiously optimistic. You've not read about this out, and I'm going to swear you all to secrecy. I've had a reporter call me and say, this is a great story I want to talk about. I said, no, I don't want to talk about it, because homeless is where found. We'll have people coming in saying they got plenty of stuff in Westchester. Mm-hmm. But it is a good story, and it's one that, again, that we work with a partnership. We've been working on this for years, and it's paying off, and you can see it all through the years as the numbers go down. So it doesn't cure everything, but in fact, we've taken advantage of the things that the state allow us to do. We take advantage of the things that you gave us to do, and we've gotten a benefit.
Okay. Since all of these dollar amounts are basically based on your estimates that the need for services in foster care and child care and homeless housing, family and singles, is going to decrease over the next several months to the point where you will realize these savings, I think it behooves all of us to keep a very close eye on your census and in terms of these individual services. I would like to look at something. This is March. I would certainly like to look at something possibly by the end of April to see whether or not you're still headed in that decreasing estimate that you put on paper here.
Okay. I mean, even with the housing, remember that even with taking this off, I still have plenty of vacancy factor, or I wouldn't have done it. But,
go ahead.
The reductions in certain things are absolute, and reductions in other things are built, of course, on caseload census.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, my primary concern is foster care and the child care piece of it, because I think our society tends to do a great disservice in that we tend to put our savings on the backs of children and young people rather than where they should be. And we know that, you know, it pays off in the end by having more people incarcerated and other very severe, expensive problems. So I would like to make sure that going forward, your statistics are hopefully reliable and end up the way you're looking for them to end up. But if not, I think that we have to be in a position to make sure that we provide the necessary services, especially for children. I think it's critical, and that's why I think it would be good if you could come back to us again the end of April. Let us know statistically where you're going. Sure. And
can we just wrap around one more time to the opening premise, which was you stated there was a $25 million deficit for 2011?
If we got FMAP. If we got the FMAP that's in the Senate now. If we don't get that, it's 49.
Just to DSS?
Yep. And that's minimal. I mean, if we have a case of increase, that's going to drop.
So what you've suggested here provides you with $6 million.
That's correct.
What are you going to do about the rest?
Well, I mean, there's certain things that I absolutely can't do. As you're well aware, I don't have $40 million of discretionary money in the department. So we're trying to do everything we can do to control what we can control. But other than that, you know, it's going to be a deficit that we have to fill one way or the other.
When will we know?
Well, you'll know about November. The Senate whenever they pass that. Yeah. Senate, you'll know probably a month or two after that with respect to how much FMAP's really coming down from the state.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And then you're looking at that. Let's say you know, you get $20 million. And on top of, so that takes $20 million off of the 33, so it'd have $13 million hole, plus the $6.3 million, the cap hit that I'll take next year for, or this year, or next year for Medicaid. So that puts me just under 20. And then if the state budget goes through the way it is, there's another $1.74 million tax levy hit buried in there.
Can you go back through those numbers again? So you're explaining why we're at 25 or
I said how I could get 40? To the 20 or 25.
Yeah, yeah say that again.
Okay. If we don't get any assistance now, we have $33 million that you all budgeted for FMAP, which was fine. We got reimbursed for that. So that $33 million then is in my budget. as a shortfall. In addition to that, next year...
A shortfall because we aren't getting it a second.
Right, right.
Okay, that's what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm. It was a one-shot.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then we have the regular recurring nut that we carry every month, every year with respect to the cap hit for Medicaid. In 2011, that'll be $6.3 million. So you add the 33 plus the 6.3, and now we're at 39.5. You've got the state right now who has things on the table that will cost me $1.74 million with respect to the shifts that they're doing, and now you're over $40 million.
And the 1.6 would be you would have to back, because they would say change the formulas or something that we would have to backfill with tax dollars?
We have to figure out how to cover that shortfall or to go back and say, I got to cut some more things out of here. Mm-hmm. So, once they start to settle, what's happening, then that doesn't even count one of the most important things that they're cutting out that a lot of people aren't talking about. It doesn't hit my operating budget, but they're cutting out about $800,000 to kids to put them to work this summer. That's about 500 kids across this whole the state.
Summer jobs program.
Summer jobs program.
Right, they were using TANF money for that. And they've cut that out because they said they were reprogramming the TANF money. The real key there is that if we ask them to put it back and they put it back, they got to get it from someplace else, and then it may hit the operating budget. So it's one of those catch-22s. That's a real concern for me.
That was how many kids?
About 500.
How many do we employ to Playland? So, are you maybe bigger than Playland?
Well, this was all, we sent the money directly to the WIBs, or the WIAs. So we just it comes through my budget. I can either do it myself or I have them do it. They're better at it than I am. So we sent the money to the Westchester Putnam WIB and to the Yonkers WIB. They would then contract out with a lot of the youth bureaus and a lot of, and then we would add additional.
And did they take an administrative fee?
I don't think they took much of any admin costs, but it wasn't a lot.
Nice, small.
And then we would add a little TANF money that we had left over to run special things for our foster kids and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we're going to have that this year, but clearly that 500 is a big hit. There's a lot of kids who count on that I don't have an answer for. I just don't have an answer for. So, the danger is advocating that they fix it and then they end up making a change. It's the operating budget. Now I got another thing that's going forward. So obviously it's a tough time in Albany and it's a tough time here, but that, of all the changes, the other things we can try to figure out how to take care of once they come in and take a look at how we can deal with those. But that hit is brutal.
I still don't get you how you get to the $25 million, though.
Okay, the $25 million then is, I'm now at 40. Okay, the Senate bill passes, and they're going to give you the FMAP increase for 6 months.
Oh.
So roughly that's half of $33 million.
So it goes from 40 from 40
so
minus
it goes
16.
From the 33 to 16.5. Then you add the 6.5 on, then the 1.7.
Yummy. Do you have a commitment from the county executive that if things go badly in the economy and the census picks up, that these programs, which would be needed, would be restorable?
We assured the county executive that those things that we reduced, that we would be able to take care of. This was ours through our current structure. We did tell the county executive that the savings that's projected for foster care is caseload driven. If it goes up, we're going to use it. We're mandated. And we won't realize that savings. We don't anticipate that doing, but we did tell them.
But the county executive has not told you, having made this suggestion that this is what you can cut, that if in fact things go badly, he's not going to let you have that money back.
The money's
will
in
be
our,
available.
The money's in our budget. You know,
it's
again,
just not going to be spent. And
right.
You would be able to spend it under the
right.
circumstances.
Absolutely.
Okay, mm-hmm. And there has been no indication that he would not be prepared to let you do that.
No.
Good. Okay. That would seem perfectly reasonable. I just wanted to check.
Yes. No, that's the foster care savings. The other ones are reductions. We're actually taking those.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we feel we can handle that. Even an increase in census in our other contracts. You know, we have $22 million in preventive service contracts. So.
I'm talking more ways than one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyone else?
No.
No.
Open it up for the audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Open it up for the audience.
Is any? Oh, right. I'm sorry. All of you have devoted the better part of the afternoon to this. Does anyone have any questions? You're all gloom and doom, right? Yes. You want to identify yourself?
Yeah, my name is Regina Wright. I'd like to know if Cedar Knolls and Stony Lodge are still part. Do you have any kind of contracts with those two places? Stony Lodge is a mental health facility in Ossining, and Stony Lodge is a in and out. Cedar Knolls is a residential place that. I know they get.
We have a contract with Hawthorne Senior Knolls for residential services. We do not contract with Stony Lodge, although children do go there, and basically, if they go there, it'd be paid for by some third party insurance, which could include Medicaid.
Okay.
Is someone else that had a question?
Howard. Howard Milbert, Westchester Early Childhood Directors Association. Most of the children in. Daycare are enrolled in the summer and in September. By stopping Title 20 in June, that means that all of those children will no longer be eligible for subsidy, and that we're talking about essentially winding down the Title 20 program as opposed to freezing it in place at a certain number. Mm-hmm. Also, in terms of the need, the fact that we are practically at the number of slots that was allocated in the budget shows that there is a need. We're only 3 months that the need is increasing. We're only 3 months into the calendar year. It does not show that it is decreasing in any way. And from my experience, I've seen more families falling into the Title 20 category as their incomes are being cut because of the recession.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Barbara? Yes.
Hi, I'm Cora Greenberg with the Westchester Children's Association. I wondered in the changes in the foster care census of having more youngsters either leaving care or coming down to a lower level of care, if there's a concomitant increase in cost in any community services, either through preventive services or, you know, any other contracts. In other words, if they're not in residential care and they're in the community, either in foster homes or back at their own homes, is there any other increases in the service costs that they need being back in the community? Is this a net, or is that already included in the preventive service contracts of the $22 million?
I mean, one, when they're back in the community, that's the community they came from.
Yes, but they often need services.
Well, we have aftercare programs, and our aftercare programs are handling the number of cases, and we anticipate that they'll be able to handle them as they step down. Again, you know, this isn't like hundreds of kids coming back. You know, the kids at higher levels of care are extremely expensive. You know, this $3 million could be as few as 30 kids.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Or as many as around 60.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you know, this is expensive, as you well know, as we get into the higher levels of care. And we're always looking for new and different programs. We have an interesting program that's working right now with a wraparound program with NAFI that saved us about $55,000 a kid, but gives them better services and better services in our community. So, yeah.
Can I ask a question? Do you see an increase in 1055 placements? Are they sort of holding steady, and about how many are those?
They have been holding steady, and I believe we have around, I want to say 100, though. I think it might be lower than that, but somewhere in that range.
So I remember last year we were talking about a NAFI contract to do wraparound for some of those families.
That's good. We also have that contract in place.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yes.
Yeah. I was wondering if, when you... have a place like Cedar Knolls or the place that you sometimes have people go to that is not a contract with, but you will have them go to Stony Lodge. If you have any way of monitoring these institutions to make sure that they're not doing anything which actually could be detrimental to the children. I'm thinking in particular of about 11 years ago when I know that their children who go to some of these residential places, they could be impregnated maybe by incest or something like that. And they're really not, they're just, if they don't say anything, they're just taken right to an abortion mill. And this kind of thing shocked me. So, I mean, I'd like to know if there's something that you guys can do about that without, and the other thing is this other place that I know of, where there's given, this was again 10 or 11 years ago, where children were being sexually abused by some of the people who were actually working at a place. I know in a hospital, I guess the Department of Health can do something like that, but I don't know if they're really going to do that. You know, I mean, I'm a little concerned, and I don't know how you're going to do it unless you do it by a surprise visit, and when you're actually interviewing children,
right.
All right? And I mean, this is what we're talking about here, the welfare of the children.
Right.
Thank you.
So, the voluntary child care agencies are licensed and monitored by New York State Office of Family and Children Services. In addition to that, the children that we have placed in those facilities, we have case managers who are responsible for reviewing the plan of the child, reviewing the care provided to the child. So we also then have a role in monitoring what goes on with the kids. For children who are in psychiatric hospitals, that responsibility also falls to the state. Of course, if we're involved with a child and we're, again, planning with that facility with the child, then we'd also be reviewing the treatment they're getting there and the planning that's going on for that child.
All right, thank you very much. I want to thank you all for coming and being a part of this afternoon. And I look forward to your coming back to us in about 6 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you.
Do you accept the minutes, Terry?
Yeah, we accept the minutes. Yeah. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Stand adjourned.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for doing this. Monday they walk in. Tuesday you got them on the grill. Nice job. Now, this is serious.
This is serious.
He said he's going to be saving. And we got him here because that big number up at the top scared the crap out of him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm delighted. I feel like, I don't know how I can say a great deal better about it. I feel a great deal better.
Yeah.
How are you
doing?
But these are
mice
that we
put. Oh, yeah. No, he's rolling back every one of our discretionary.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you.
100,000.